was the full-blown fury of the storm. Dozens of wall guns lit with fire. Emplacement weaponry opened up, heavy bolters and stubbers chugging mercilessly as they spat shells at the charging Imperial army. Deeper booms rolled from within the city bounds, explosives sailing up from hidden artillery positions to plunge down upon the Imperial lines.
"The Emperor protects!"
cried Saint Celestine, who soared at the front of the army with her jump-pack wings spread and her sword raised. The next instant, fire and thunder transformed the world. The ground shook beneath Meritorius's feet, almost throwing her onto her face. Her armor's inertial dampeners kicked in, compensating for buffeting shockwaves of overpressure. Explosions blinded and deafened her, and as they cleared, she saw sundered bedrock and bloody bodies raining from the skies. Imperial tanks burned, their gutted carcasses rolling to a stop. Wounded soldiers lay and screamed in horror, in agony, in fury. Yet the Saint's light was still there, untouched at the forefront of the assault, shining bright as the Emperor's own Astronomicon to guide their way.
"Do not slow your pace!"
ordered Meritorius, her voice vox amplified to carry over the terrible roar of battle.
"Sisters, commence the prayer of holy abjuration!"
The sororitas raised their voices in plain song again, and as they did so, a shimmering haze grew in the air around them. Artillery boomed, shells filled the air, whipping both ways. More explosions, more death.
"Beware the ditches!"
came Captain Blaskane's voice over the general command channel. Yet it was not so easy amidst the smoke and mayhem. Meritorius herself almost pitched forwards into a yawning trench. The metal spikes that lined it made it look like some monster's starving maw. She leapt the gap, thumping down on the other side. Several of her sisters were less fortunate, and cries of pain rose behind her as they fell. A trio of Lehman Russ battle tanks thundered past on Meritorius's right, cannon barrels elevated. The trio fired, shots whipping away to slam into the ramparts with explosive force. Enemy field guns disintegrated, their ammunition touching off and raising a rippling firestorm that reduced screaming heretics to wind-blown ash. Meritorius bellowed, an inarticulate sound of triumph for the sight that was choked off as a massive shell whistled down and landed upon the central tank. She shielded her eyes before the blast blinded her, but this time she was thrown from her feet. As Sister Penitence hauled her upright, Meritorius saw that two of the Lehman Russes were nothing but wreckage, while the third was still forging on towards the walls with one track unit half torn away and its hull aflame.
"Keep moving!"
cried Meritorius to whoever could still hear her.
"Sisters, raise your prayers to the Emperor in this dark hour!"
She ran again, heading for the walls, following the light of the saint as it shot away towards the ramparts. Around her, her sisters' voices soared, and this time the hazy illumination blazed.
"Whatever that is,"
came Captain Macklin's voice over the vox,
"keep it up! Look at the enemy gun crews! They're blinded!"
Without the benefit of multispectral augurs and targeter arrays, Meritorius could see nothing of the foe. But she had faith, and sure enough the enemy's bombardment slackened as the sisters continued to sing. Meritorius surged through the smoke, still leading more than 20 sisters of battle, who in turn led hundreds of screaming Cadian soldiers. Explosions blossomed ahead, showing where the basilisk's shells struck the wall yet again. They were so close now. This must be it. She burst through the last whipping trails of smoke and staggered to a halt. Wall Section 9 still stood. Battered, blasted, riven with gaping cracks and ablaze from one end of its battlements to the other, but still very much intact. Shots rained down from neighbouring wall sections, punching two of Meritorius's sisters from their feet. Cadians staggered in behind them, their massed ranks easy targets gathering barely 100 feet from the foot of the wall. The ravaged remains of the war engine's glyph leered down at them. To Aniqua's eye, it looked triumphant.
"Find cover!"
she barked.
"Suppressing fire against the wall top! Heavy weapons, hit the breach with everything you have! Flamers, burn those heretics you can reach! Faith and determination, sisters and brothers! The Emperor will not forsake us!"
She raised her bolter and sprayed shots up at the walls, hoping against hope that her words rang true. Within his Torocs, Blaskane swore quietly and vociferously. The runic display on his Auspex was crude, but it showed him enough. He saw the Saint atop the walls, wreaking a platoon's worth of butchery amongst the enemy gun crews. He saw the basilisks continuing their bombardment of Section 9. But he also saw the Imperial advance stymied as it reached a breach that did not yet exist. The attack was piling up, spreading out like liquid pooling against a flat surface.
"Spread them out,"
Blaskane ordered over the vox.
"Use the shell holes and wrecks for cover. Maintain fire."
It was all he could do. His Torocs was halfway across no man's land, picking its way between the ditches, following a pair of Leman Russ punishers towards the walls. They were amongst the rear lines of the attack, but they would be at the walls soon enough. "And what then?" he asked himself.
"Sir?"
queried Cassagelt, lifting one earphone of her headset. "What then, Astrid? Do we just mass at the walls and wait? We'll be butchered in a matter of minutes."
"The Saint said we must have faith, sir," said Cassagelt,
and Blaskane nodded in frustration. The churn of emotions in his chest was too complex to convey. That he did feel faith in a way he hadn't ever, even before Cadia's fall. That he had to preserve the lives of his soldiers if he could. That every line of strategic scripture he had ever learned was screaming at him to order a retreat and rethink this suicidal assault. That he desperately didn't want to admit defeat and pull back those assets that could yet be saved, lest he see again those he left behind on Cadia reflected in every soldier who fell during the subsequent rout. Instead, Blaskane settled for a surly grunt. His eyes flickered to the vidfeed from one of Macklin's tanks near the wall. It showed the Saint glowing like a star as she leapt and spun along the rampart with her blade, lashing and stabbing. Heretics flung themselves at her and were smashed away, sent flailing over the ramparts or hacked into bloody rags. The Gemini Superior fought at their mistress's side, pistols blazing as they gunned down artillery crews and heretic militia. It was a stirring sight, but alone, Blaskane knew it still wasn't enough. Then, over the vox, came a desperate voice that filled his veins with ice.
"Mayday, mayday, this is Gunnery Sergeant Ockquist to any available Imperial forces. Basilisk battery under attack. Repeat, we are under attack by massed cultist forces. Origin of assault unknown. Numbers overwhelming. Creed's ghost, they've got massed Drekker leading them.
Hawkwiss's voice cut out amidst a squeal of static. Blaskane looked at Cassagelt, her horrified expression echoing his own.
"No artillery. No breach," she breathed.
"Throne, damn it,"
snarled Blaskane, trying to thump the console with a fist he no longer possessed. This was not how the attack was meant to go. He had seen the glory of the Saint. He had saved her for Terra's sake. How could things turn out this way? Was this his punishment for Cadia, he wondered? Was it a punishment upon all of them for letting the gate fall? No. This wasn't the work of the Emperor. That still lay before them, he realized. No matter the odds, no matter the cost.
"This is Blaskane to all forces," he barked over the box. "All small arms, concentrate upon the wall top. Everything heavier than a damn lasgun. Fire on the breach. We'll make a gap even if we have to tear the walls down with our bare hands. The Emperor expects of us, ladies and gentlemen, and we shall not disappoint him."
"Noble sentiment, Major, but let the armour handle this, eh?"
Captain Macklin was addressing him on a private channel. He frowned, glancing at the Auspex to see her designator rune moving towards the front lines. Several of her most veteran engines formed a spearhead in front of her executioner, and infantry scattered from their path.
"Captain, even your guns aren't going to bring that wall down without an awful lot of supporting fire and a throne-sent miracle," said Blaskane.
"I am well aware of the tolerances and capabilities of my engines, Major," replied Macklin, her tone haughty.
"Then what... Wait, Petronella, what are you doing?"
He gripped the console with his remaining hand as he realized her spearhead wasn't slowing. One Russ signifier blinked out, then a second. Macklin and the two remaining tanks forged on, almost at the front lines now.
"There can be no greater demonstration of one's faith in the Emperor than to offer up that which one holds most dear upon the altar of his greatness," said Macklin.
"Don't quote scripture at me now, Captain," snapped Blaskane. "This is not the time."
"I would say it is precisely the time, since I shan't be getting another chance," replied Macklin.
And Blaskane heard an undercurrent of sorrow and acceptance beneath her dignified tone.
"Captain, your experience and skill are required if we are to carry this attack home. Whatever you are planning, I order you to halt your advance and fire upon the breach immediately,"
barked Blaskane.
"I'm sorry, Major, but you know there's only one way that wall is coming down now. Thing about running helm on an executioner, you accept early on that you're essentially in charge of a damn great bomb on tracks. I've had a better run than most, and it's been an honour to serve alongside you."
"Petronella, there's another way,"
he said, as he saw her tank's rune break the front line and race for the breach, the two remaining Russ designators peeling off to let her go.
"There has to be!
Faith, duty, and sacrifice," came Petronella Macklin's last words over the vox.
Sister Meritorius saw the plasma tank surge out of the Imperial lines, rolling over the bodies of the dead, ploughing through flames and wreckage. A storm of fire hissed from the machine's hull, yet miraculously it kept going, shells and rockets ricocheting from its heavy armour. Meritorius knew precious little of the sacred mysteries of the Omnisire, yet even she could see the way the tank's plasma coils were growing alarmingly bright and steam was gouting from its exchange vents.
"They're going to overload in the breach," she breathed, then shouted,
"Down! Down and cover! Now! Now! Now!"
Around her, sisters and guardsmen alike shielded their eyes and ducked down as best they could. The tank slammed at full speed into the shuddering wall section, and then the world turned white. The explosion was so ferocious that it extinguished Meritorius's hearing completely. Everything seemed to stop for an instant, replaced by the purity of holy bright light.
Then sound rushed back in, the sounds of flaming rubble crashing down, the screaming of wounded soldiers and the avalanche rumble of Wall Section 9 caving in upon itself.
Meritorius was up in a heartbeat, blade raised and crackling. She looked upon the remains of Captain Macklin's sacrifice and felt righteous fury building within her. Meritorius was glad for Macklin in that moment, for the captain was with the Emperor now. But at the same time, she felt nothing but hatred for the heretics who had driven Petronella Macklin to give her life.
"We have our breach,"
she bellowed, her vox-amplified voice rolling like thunder.
"Praise the throne! We have our breach! Advance in the Emperor's name!"
Warriors rose, bewilderment turning to fury as they saw the gaping hole where Captain Macklin's martyrdom had opened the way. As one, the beleaguered Imperial war machine surged into motion and charged for the breach. Meritorius led the way, and as she pounded through the still glowing rent in the ferrocrete wall, she saw the light of the saint descending from above to lead them onwards.
"To victory!"
bellowed Aniqua Meritorius.
"To victory!"
beyond. Celestine soared upwards into golden light that shone as bright as the heart of a star. She heard a singing note growing all around her, and her soul sang in chorus with it, for surely here was the divine light of the Emperor.
"We have found that which we sought, sisters," she cried.
But there was no reply from Faith or from Duty. Celestine realized that the light about her had become so fulminating that she could no longer see the mountain from within which she had flown, nor the churning skies that had loomed above her for so long, nor even her two sisters who just moments before had flown at her side.
"Faith? Duty? Where are you?" shouted Celestine.
Her only answer was that singular note, the ring of cut crystal swelling by the moment into a deafening chime that vibrated through Celestine's body and seemed to shiver her bones. There was no up or down, nothing around her by which to navigate or orient herself. There was only the light, so blinding she could barely keep her eyes open, and the sound, so deafening now that it was all Celestine could do to endure it.
"It is the unfettered might of the Emperor, a last test against which I must prove my worth," she told herself,
yet so loud had the ringing around Celestine become that she might as well not have spoken. She felt a wetness upon the sides of her face that might have been blood trickling from her ears. She closed her eyes against the glare, yet still she could see it, even through her eyelids. Celestine was blasted by light and sound, saturated with it, until she felt as though everything that made her what she was might dissolve and be scattered as motes upon the air. Still she beat her golden wings, striving to climb higher and higher into the light. To turn back is to fail in the sight of the Emperor, to be sealed outside the final gate, she thought. To turn back is to be consigned to that purgatorial wasteland forever, or until my soul curdles and rots away amidst the corruption of chaos. She knew she must press on. She must. Yet every wing beat brought pain more severe. Celestine burned in the heart of a divine furnace. She was battered by tidal waves of sound, pierced by blades of searing illumination and razor-sharp symphony. All coherent thought was driven from her mind. All but that one idea. Do not turn back. Do not turn back. Do not. Do not. Light and sound vanished so suddenly that it was as though a bomb had gone off inside Celestine's mind. The cessation of stimuli was shocking, and only after a moment did she realize that she had been, and still was, screaming. She closed her mouth and opened her eyes, fighting a heartbeat's fear that she must surely have been rendered deaf and blind. Instead, Celestine found herself sprawled upon soft grass, beside a fast-flowing stream of crystal-clear water. The scent of flowers reached her nostrils, and as her ears stopped ringing, at last she caught the sigh of a gentle breeze through leaves and the lazy drone of insects. Celestine sat up, bleary, bewildered. She felt the gentle warmth of the sun upon her skin, its dappled light falling through the stirring branches of trees that stretched out their limbs to form a dome canopy above the clearing.
"What is this?"
asked Celestine, feeling mistrust rise in her chest. She received no answer save the gentle chuckling of the brook and the soft soughing of the trees as they danced lazily in the breeze. Frowning, Celestine rose to her feet. She was thirsty, she realized, for the first time since she had awoken atop the mountain of bone. She was hungry, too. She glanced at the ice-clear waters that flowed past, and at the fruit bushes that grew here and there amidst the tree line. Celestine shook her head and set her jaw,
I will not trust anything of this realm, no matter how fair it might seem, she said. Yet she could not help but feel out of place, the bloodied warrior in her filth-stained armor, too harrowed in mind and soul to accept the natural bounty that surrounded her. It was as though everything else were a gentle symphony, and she the only jarring note. Celestine sensed nothing of the chaotic corruption that had surrounded her in the lair of the worm, or in the ashen city, or upon the mountain of bone. That said, she felt nothing of the Emperor's divinity in this place either. Celestine decided that she would not relax her guard. Instead, eyes flicking around for possible threats, she drew her blade and prepared herself for some monstrous thing to come crashing through the trees. Faith, duty, please respond, she said into her gorget vox. Static hissed back at her. Sisters, are you out there? Celestine tried again, but still received no answer. Minutes passed. The breeze shifted the trees with a gentle hiss. The waters of the stream flowed on. The sunlight danced through the branches, spreading a delicate play of light and shadow across the lush grass of the clearing. Celestine felt her eyes drawn to its shifting shapes, despite herself, and something tickled at the back of her mind as she watched the soft play of light and shade. A memory, perhaps, moving just below the surface of her conscious mind. She wasn't sure how long she stood like that, alive for threats, before a plump and fuzzy airborne insect bumbled through the air and settled upon her right pauldron. Celestine snapped her eyes towards it, ready to slap the creature away at the first sign of a threat. It ignored her entirely, fastidiously cleaning its limbs, turning in a slow and inadvertent circle as it struggled to reach its own hindquarters. It was, Celestine reflected, as absurd a spectacle as she herself must currently make. Oh, for goodness sake, she said, shaking her head and dropping her guard. She brushed the insect away and it set up an indignant drone as it wobbled away through the air. I cannot stand here forever, blade raised against non-existent threats, Celestine told herself. If my sisters are lost, then I must find them. And whether this is some paradise of the Emperor's making, or just another veil of mists, I will not discover the truth stood here. Celestine closed her eyes and felt for the Emperor's light. After a moment she realized that all she could feel was the warm sunlight as it caressed her skin. The sensation was good, pure somehow, but different to the ephemeral candle flame that had guided her path thus far. Celestine opened her eyes, surprised and disquieted. And yet, what if they are one and the same? She asked herself, realizing that she had no other form of guidance for the moment, and unwilling to simply guess at a random direction in which to travel. Celestine resolved that she would follow the light of the sun. A glance at the canopy told her that, for the moment, taking to the air was not an option. Instead, Celestine folded her wings close into her back, and, taking a moment to fix the position of the sun in the sky, she strode off towards it with a look of determination upon her face. Perhaps an hour passed as Celestine marched through the idyllic woodland. There was an underbrush enough to add to the forest's beauty, but not so much that it impeded Celestine's progress. The trees grew tall and proud. She found that the longer she looked at their gnarled bark and spreading boughs, the more familiar they seemed. Where is this place? Celestine asked herself. Yet no answer was forthcoming. Whatever memories moved in the deeper currents of her mind, they refused to surface. She slowly became aware of another sound upon the air, a roar both breathy and distant that set her to scanning for threats again. Passing through a thicket of spry saplings, Celestine heard the sound a little clearer,
and felt an involuntary smile quirk the corners of her mouth. "The ocean," she breathed. "That is the sound of waves breaking upon a shore." Celestine felt a simple happiness in her heart, a sense of peacefulness that she could not quite account for. She wondered why this was so familiar.
"Faith, duty, if you can hear me, I am approaching a stretch of coastline,"
voxed Celestine.
"Sisters, make for the sound of the waves, or, if you can get airborne, move towards the coast and look for me there. I am proceeding, and will take the lie of the land."
She pressed on, out from under the eaves of the forest. Scattered fruit trees formed a natural orchard around her, their boughs heavy with ripe crimson orbs. But they were no longer dense enough to be called woodland. Celestine ignored them and marched on across the loamy soil under a clear blue sky. Tatters of white cloud rode the winds high above, and winged shapes wheeled, causing her to raise her blade again. Yet Celestine soon identified the creatures as nothing more than some species of coastal avian, and she dismissed them as irrelevant. Ahead, the land rose into a steep bluff with tough grass tufts clinging to its leeward side. Celestine knew, though she didn't know how, that this ridge was the trailing edge of a huge sand dune. Beyond its crest, the soughing of the waves promised a beautiful ocean view. Celestine felt happiness growing within her. She knew a wash of contentment that she could do nothing to dispel. A sense of familiarity that she could neither place nor shake off. It was maddening and pleasant in equal measure. As she dug her armored feet into the slope of the dune and began to climb, Celestine glanced up towards the crest. She froze. Up there, jarring and incongruous in this beautiful but empty place, she saw the silhouette of a human head and shoulders, just visible above the ridgeline, looking away from her towards the ocean. They were small, rendered in silhouette by the sun, which spilled over the dune and limned the figure's dark hair with gold. She knew them. She began to climb again, suddenly as nervous and eager as one who has long been away from the love of their life and now hurries impatiently towards reunion. Celestine's heart thumped in a chest tightened by nerves and anticipation. Thoughts of potential dangers, of her lost sisters or her current location, were driven from her mind by the singular thought that she would, at last. Celestine stopped herself halfway up the dune. She would at last what? Be reunited with a child that she had met only hours or days ago? She would at last catch up to this silent figure who had come and gone like a mirage, remaining just out of reach. Did she know her, truly? Her caution returned, and one hand tightened on the hilt of her blade. What, if anything, did she know in this place, except that nothing was what it first seemed? The child had not moved. She had not responded to the whine of Celestine's armor servos, or the crunch and skitter of sandy soil shifting beneath power-armored boots, though she must surely have heard both. She merely sat, still as stone but for the slight stirring of her hair in the sea breeze. Cautious now, Celestine altered the angle of her climb, circling out around to the right of the child as she ascended towards the top of the dune. Her blade glinted in the sunlight, its killing edge keen, the silver catching the light in tight ripples. She imagined what she might see as she finally set eyes on the child's face, dreading some ghastly apparition sent to lure her in, then set upon her, the poisoned barb at the heart of some paradisiacal death trap. "Just a child," she said aloud as she finally set eyes on the girl. She was as Celestine remembered, a slight little thing with dark hair and dark eyes, who looked up at her curiously. The girl scrunched her face up in a squint, shielding her eyes with one hand.
"Hello," she said.
"Hello," replied Celestine, uncertain what else to do. The two of them remained that way for several heartbeats. Celestine saw their shadows form a frozen tableau down the dune's flank. The tall warrior with a blade in hand and wings folded tight to her back. The wisp of a child staring up with innocent curiosity. Celestine realized with a start that she still had her sword raised. Hurriedly, she sheathed it. Of the two of them here, it was she that must appear the monster. "Who are you?" asked Celestine, trying to keep her voice gentle. The girl looked in no danger of startling or fleeing, but Celestine had little enough experience with anyone that wasn't a warrior or a foe. Little girls were wholly unfamiliar territory. She would take no chances.
"I'm Hope," replied the girl.
Celestine blinked as the name sparked something inside her, a jolt that ran through her whole body. "What are you doing here, Hope?" asked Celestine.
"I'm watching the waves," said Hope. "Would you like to join me?"
she added shyly after a moment's pause. "Thank you, Hope, I shall," replied Celestine, unsure how else to respond. As gently as one could in full power armor, she settled herself near the girl. Celestine left a clear 3 feet of sand and air between them. She told herself it was to avoid making Hope nervous, but she wondered if it would be truer to say it was for her own benefit. "The view is beautiful," said Celestine after the silence had stretched long between them. She found she meant it. The dune's windward slope swept away before her, golden sand dotted for the first dozen yards with tufts of grass. Further away, the sun-warmed sands of the beach sloped down to the tide line, where they became slick, several shades darker where the waters had retreated. The ocean itself was a magnificent immensity beyond, its waves questing in and out amidst dancing sprays of foam near the shoreline. They rippled, slow and stately, atop the depths further out, crowned with gold by the sun's rays. Eventually the vista faded until sea and sky became one upon a distant and hazy horizon. Celestine waited for the child to speak. But Hope had returned to staring at the view, her short legs stretched out in front of her, a stalk of grass idly twisting in her fingers. "Hope, where is this place?" asked Celestine.
"The beach, beyond the woods," said the child, sounding distracted.
"That much I can see," said Celestine gently. "But where is this? Is this a world in real space, or somewhere else?" Hope didn't reply, just kept twisting her grass. Celestine decided to try something else. "I've seen you before, haven't I?" she asked. "You were there at the bottom of the cliff, then again at the top of the ascent. And I'm sure I've seen you again since, running ahead of me through the shadows. How did you come to be here, Hope? How did you survive?" Hope glanced at her.
"That lady wasn't nice," she said. "She hurt my arm."
"I know, Hope, and I'm sorry that she did that, but she was not herself," said Celestine, trying to sound as kindly as she could. "Have you seen her? Or the other woman that I was with?" Hope shook her head. She frowned with childlike severity at the grass that was twisting apart in her fingers. Celestine sighed. She returned her gaze to the horizon.
"Why don't you know where you are?"
asked Hope after a pause.
"Are you lost?"
Yes, Hope, I think I am, said Celestine. I was following a light, and it led me here, but now I do not know where here is, and I do not know what to do next. Hope's frown deepened, and Celestine had the distinct impression that the child was giving her words serious consideration.
What if here is where you were going?
She asked.
What if you've arrived?
Celestine laughed ruefully. It's a lovely notion, child, but I have a duty. There is a great task I must complete before I can rest.
Oh, said Hope.
Then after a pause, she asked,
What is it? Your task?
You helped to remind me of it, Hope. Do you not recall? The girl shook her head. Do you know what monsters are, Hope? Asked Celestine gently. Hope nodded quickly. Well, there are monsters out there in the galaxy. They come from somewhere else, somewhere wicked, and it is my job to send them back.
Are there lots of monsters?
Asked Hope in a small voice. There are, but you must not fear. I am equal to my duty, Celestine said, her voice hardening with determination on the last few words.
Do you have to fight them alone?
Asked Hope. No, I have my sisters wherever they have gone, said Celestine. And there are others, so many others, all sworn to fight the monsters too. Hope frowned.
But if there are so many people who can fight the monsters, why is it your duty? Couldn't you stop and let them do it instead? You could stay here. It's nice here.
Celestine paused, a reply half formed in her open mouth. She was rocked by the sudden certainty that she could do what Hope suggested. She realized that she could divest herself of her armor, lay down her blade to be buried by the shifting sands, and simply stop fighting. Yet as she looked at the little girl, she felt a sudden stab of recognition, a stiletto of emotion that slid between her ribs. Who are you? Asked Celestine again. Hope merely looked confused, her expression turning down at the edges as the sharpness of Celestine's tone threatened to upset her. I'm sorry, child, said Celestine. I am not sure if you can understand this, but when I look at you, I feel such a keen sense of familiarity. It is as though, were I to do as you suggested, to remain here with you, I would come to know at last who you are and what you are to me. Hope blinked, and Celestine realized the girl was fighting tears.
Stay?
Hope asked suddenly.
Stay this time?
Celestine felt her breath catch at the aching need she felt to sweep the child up in her arms and comfort her. There was such aching sorrow in Hope's small voice, so much more sorrow than any little girl should ever have to feel. Oh, child, she breathed, and realized that she was fighting back tears of her own. What do you mean this time?
Don't you know?
Asked Hope. And now the tears did come, squeezing from the corners of her eyes and tracking down her cheeks. Her narrow chest hitched, and a sob escaped her. Hope, I...
You always leave!
Shouted the little girl, suddenly furious. She pushed herself to her feet and ran off down the dune, puffs of sand kicking up behind her heels. The shredded twist of grass drifted to the ground in her wake. Hope! Called Celestine, starting to her feet. The girl didn't reply, dashing pell-mell down the slope of the dune and onto the flatter sands at its base.
She was running towards the tideline, and suddenly the roar of the waves was loud in Celestine's ears as they rolled hungrily in. What had seemed peaceful and picturesque now became greedy, the waves a rapacious presence that boiled forwards to grasp at the sand. She felt a surge of fear for Hope, who was sobbing disconsolately as she ran towards the waters. Celestine launched herself into the air, sand swirling away from her wingbeats. She arced up into a sky that darkened with racing storm clouds and arrowed down over the beach. A few swift sweeps of her wings carried her over Hope and saw her thump down in the wet sand before the girl, Celestine placing herself protectively between child and ocean. Hope kept running and thumped into Celestine with what little force she had, throwing her arms around the saint's waist. Celestine heard the gravel-throated roar of incoming waves and dropped into a crouch, encircling Hope with arms and wings both. The cold, dark waters hit Celestine from behind and rocked her forwards. Icy foam boiled around her legs, and Hope screamed amidst her sobs as the water drenched her. The waters all but engulfed Celestine for a moment, and she held tight to the tiny life within her arms. Then the waves receded, and Celestine rose with Hope cradled in her arms. She strode back up the beach, a sad certainty dawning within her. Hope clung to her, wet and cold, her tears slowly subsiding as she pressed her cheek to the hard surface of Celestine's breastplate. As they walked back up the beach, the sun split the clouds again. Columns of golden light swept the beach like searchlights, widening as the clouds tattered away into nothingness. Celestine stopped at the foot of the dune and knelt, placing Hope gently on the ground. The girl's shift was soaked, but the warm sun was already making inroads into drying it. The tears that tracked her face would take longer to dispel, thought Celestine.
"Stay," said Hope again, in a tiny, plaintive voice. But Celestine shook her head.
"I am so sorry, child, but I cannot," she said. "That was not the deal. I know now that if I were to stay, I would know you, and you and I would have the peace of that knowing. We would dwell in this beautiful place, and it would feel like all the reward that I could possibly expect for the lives beyond count that I have given. But Hope, if I stayed, it would destroy us both as surely as if I had let you be swept away by the ocean waves. To surrender to temptation would let the monsters in. Do not ask me how I know this, child, for I cannot tell you. I just know."
"But I'm lonely," said Hope. "And you never stay. It's never done."
"One day, Hope," said Celestine. "Have faith, my girl. One day it will be."
"Promise?"
asked Hope, and the desperate trust Celestine heard in the girl's voice made her soul hurt. "I promise, Hope. No matter what I must do, what I must give, I will not fail in my duty. And one day when I come to you here, I will stay. We will know each other, and we will understand, and that will be enough." And then she stood and turned away, and told herself as she did so that she didn't feel the suffocating pain of her heart breaking within her breast. Traitorous thoughts whirled through her mind as she took first one pace away, and then another, and another, as she tried not to hear the little girl that she left crying in her wake. Had she once been hers, Celestine wondered? Or was she in some way her? Her innocence, her chance at life? Celestine didn't know, but her blade felt suddenly heavier than it ever had, the cling of her armour claustrophobic and hateful, and the little girl's soft sobbing made her want to hurl it all aside, to gather her up and hold her close until her crying stopped.
Emperor, I swear to you that neither demon nor heretic shall stand between me and that which you have promised, and that I will fight for you until the fires of war are quenched in the blood of your butchered foes, said Celestine as she walked towards the ocean. Her voice was razor-sharp steel, tempered by pain and fury. But though I am your faithful servant, and though I have only love for you in my heart, I say this now. You keep her safe until my task is done. You fill her days with simple happiness, and you keep her mind from thoughts of loneliness or loss. The Emperor protects. That is what I have always told those who look to me for guidance. So protect her and honor her, or I swear that the last heart I plunge my blade into will be my own, as many times as I must, for I shall do no further duty for you. Celestine waited for some bolt of divine wrath to strike her down for her blasphemous words, but none came. Instead, she walked on towards the hungry waves and did not once look back. As she reached the tide line, the waters shuddered and swept aside. They parted for her, and where her armoured feet fell, Celestine found the seabed hard and firm, cracked dry earth where there should have been wet sand. With every pace she drove the ocean back. With every moment the golden light of the sun turned a bloodier hue, until it became sullen firelight, dancing amidst drifting clouds of thick black smoke. The ground shuddered as though to the beat of some vast heart, and as it shook, so it heaved and cracked. The waters of the ocean roared down into those fissures, vanishing amidst gouts of steam, even as coils of rusted wire grew from the desiccated soil like razor weed. Celestine felt her heart harden with every step she took through what was rapidly becoming an arid and broken no man's land, where bloodied corpses burned in ragged shell holes, and the sky was lost amidst the fume of battle. Still, she did not dare look back.
"Halt! I sense her!"
came a voice, crackling from Celestine's gorget vox.
"Faith?" asked Celestine. "Is that you?"
"Saint, it is I," came the reply. "Emperor be praised! We thought you lost for sure."
With a few swift adjustments, Celestine routed Faith's transmission into her armor's basic Auspex unit and triangulated her location, perhaps a mile ahead, through the wastes.
"Stay where you are," said Celestine. "I will come to you. Is duty with you?"
"I am, Saint," came duty's reply. "We have searched for you for many days amidst this grim place. Where have you been?"
"For me it has been but a matter of hours," said Celestine, picking her way through the desiccated ruins of a battle long since fought. She skirted a rusted tank, something hulking and imperial, whose blasted remains were lodged amidst a mound of rubble. "As to where I was," she found she could not bring herself to speak of it. She didn't want to. The forest and the beach were hers. Hope was hers. Within minutes, Celestine and her comrades were reunited. Faith laughed in unalloyed joy when she saw Celestine through the smoke, while Duty's frown gave way to a wolfish grin. "My sisters," said Celestine, observing that neither of the angelic women showed any sign of the hardships they had endured. They were unmarked by the foulness of the worm's lair, and their robes and armour were unsullied by dirt or blood. Their brands burned bright, as did their eyes.
"Saint," said Faith, "you are here at last."
"But where is here?" asked Celestine.
"Why, it is the end," said Duty. "And it is the beginning. It is that which we have sought together, which you have sought for yourself. Whatever your last trial was, you have passed through it."
With that, the smoke began to roll back, billowing away from them as though driven by a wild gale, and revealing a cracked plain that sprawled away for mile upon mile. At the same instant,
Celestine felt again the candle's warmth upon her skin, but this time it swelled to a simmering heat and then to a roaring fire, a searing star, and its light and heat bathed her in a way that the saturating glare from before had not. This felt right. It felt wrathful, and she felt her heart beat faster as the call to war filled her. "The Emperor's light," she said, as golden rays fell upon them from on high. She looked to her sisters. She thought briefly of Hope, where she sat atop her dune, waiting. Then Celestine locked Hope away deep in her heart, where nothing could touch her, and drew her blade.
"Do you know who you are?"
asked Duty.
"I am the Emperor's blade and his guiding light," said Celestine. "I am the candle flame in the darkness, when all other light has failed his faithful servants. I am faith and duty and hope."
"We're ready, Saint," said Faith approvingly.
"We are as ready as you," said Duty.
"Then let us do the Emperor's will," said Celestine,
launching herself skywards. As she beat her wings powerfully and soared upwards into the light with her sisters at her side, she wondered whether this time would be her last. The light of the Emperor swelled. Golden and pure, it filled Celestine's world. Celestine soared upwards into the Emperor's light. Faith and Duty spiraled ever closer to her until the three of them swept upwards as one, their eyes alight with the magnificent radiance of the Master of Mankind. For an instant, Celestine felt the feather touch of small fingers upon her cheek, and saw again a small figure sat atop a dune as the waves rolled in and out below. "We will see one another again," she said, and to her ears it sounded like a promise. Celestine felt etheric winds lifting her higher and higher, speeding her ever faster towards the light. The light from Faith's and Duty's wings swelled and engulfed them in fiery halos of ruby and amethyst. As one, their ethereal forms shimmered and folded into Celestine's own. She felt their strength flow into her and whispered silent thanks as she hurtled towards the light of a searing star that grew closer with every passing breath. The veil shimmered around her. She both was and was not. She both knew and did not know. She died. She was reborn. And for one glorious moment she perceived all that she had done, and all that she had fought for, and saw all the millions of candles that she had lit across the galaxy, as their light burned ever brighter against the encroaching night. Then the veil parted before her, and the winds of eternity swept her on towards rebirth, towards her destiny. She flew. She fell. She was Celestine. Chapter 5. 415th day of the war, 2240 hours. Imperium Nihilus, planet Kofin, Shambach Ore District. LO 800-8/LA631-2. The Torrocks juddered to a halt. Blaskane could hear small arms fire ringing from the hull. Something exploded nearby, rocking the vehicle on its tracks and almost throwing him from his feet as he put out a hand he no longer owned to steady himself. Kersegeld caught him. He shot her a grateful look.
"Ladies, gentlemen, now we come to it," said Blaskane.
One-handed, he awkwardly checked the load on his las pistol. 3/4 charge remained. That would be enough. He looked around at the soldiers crammed into the bay. Kersegeld, holding the shotgun that she had sworn by for as long as he'd known her. 2 comms officers who had set aside their headsets for bulky portable vox packs. The Medicae,
even the vehicle's two drivers who stood with lasguns humming. In the mines, there would be no room for armoured vehicles or for non-combatants.
"We stand ready, sir," said Kasegelt.
"Damned right we do," said one of the drivers.
Jans, Blaskane thought. The man's name was Jans. It was better to know the names of those he would die beside.
"The saint has led us this far, and now we must follow her again," said Blaskane. "She is spearheading Attack Force Alpha, going in through the Holy Lode workings. Sister Meritorius has Force Beta and the Sainted Seam workings. That leaves us with Force Charon and the Gilded Depths. Anyone that penetrates the enemy sanctum at the mine's heart..."
He paused. What would they do if they got that far? What would they find? Saint Celestine had been vague on that point.
"We Arcadians. We will know what to do when we get there,"
he finished.
"Kill every heretic in sight, sir,"
ventured Kasegelt, racking the slide of her shotgun.
"That would be a damn good start," agreed Blaskane. "And we'll work from there. Cadia stands."
"Cadia stands,"
they barked back at him. Then Blaskane hit the release rune. The Torox's back hatch swung open to admit the din of battle, and he led the way out into the streets beyond. In a nearby courtyard, Aniqua Meritorius stood and stared into the mouth of damnation. Her 12 remaining battle sisters stood at her side, and behind them several hundred battle-weary Cadians knelt in prayer on the worn flagstones. She had commanded them to make their obeisance to the Emperor, and they had gladly obliged. Before them, the mountainside rose monolithic into the night sky. Lascut into its flank was the cavernous entrance to Sainted Seam workings, a huge, rocky tunnel mouth ringed by industrial machinery. Servitor cart tracks ran from massive ore hoppers dotted around the courtyard and vanished into the unnatural crimson glow that pulsed from the mine's maw. A droning note echoed from within, an unnatural sound that set Meritorius's teeth on edge. From behind her came the thump of cannon fire as the Asterosian Lehman Russ transports of the rearguard engaged again. The tanks were parked in the street beyond the courtyard, forming a bulwark of plasteel and iron that the enemy militia would not quickly breach. Back there, through the gloom, Meritorius could see smoke rising from the fires that spread through the city streets. Fires they had lit as they fought their way through. Cleansing fires.
"It is not an inviting sight, is it?"
said Sister Absalom, indicating the mine entrance.
"When has the Emperor ever asked us to walk into paradise to do his will?"
replied Sister Meritorius with a humorless chuckle.
"There is no worth without suffering," said Sister Penitence. "But today it will be the heretics that suffer."
"Truly,"
said Sister Meritorius, slamming a fresh clip into her bolt gun. She turned to the Cadians, who were even now rising to their feet and readying their weaponry. They looked battle-weary, she thought, but their eyes shone with zeal. Few of them had truly believed that they would make it this far, and that they had done so only stoked the fires of their faith. Faith Meritorius could use.
"Brothers and sisters, loyal servants of the Emperor, the saint has led us to the very gates of victory," she began, her gorget amplifying her voice to a magnificent boom. "Do you have the strength to pass through them and into the everlasting light of the Master of Mankind?"
They cried their assent.
"For the Emperor! The Emperor protects!"
"Cadia stands!"
"Beyond this threshold, the full might of the heretic, the demon and the abomination shall be set against us,"
shouted Meritorius.
"Do you have the faith and the courage to face them? Do you have the fortitude to prevail?"
More cries and shouts, louder and more vehement than before.
Meritorius felt the hot winds of their conviction fanning the embers of her faith into flames. Energy coursed through her, a sense of purpose purer and more ferocious than any she could remember.
Here, on this day, in this place, we have our chance to strike a blow against the dark gods themselves, she roared. Here, by the grace of the Emperor, we shall raise our blades and our guns, and we shall tell the demon no more. Here, now, we will cleanse the taint of chaos from this world with our blood, so that when the new day dawns over Kofin, it shall dawn upon a world that is loyal and pure.
Frenzied cheers met her words. The Leman Russ gunners let fly again, and explosions billowed beyond the buildings that ringed the courtyard. Sister Superior Meritorius turned to face the hellish maw and levelled her crackling blade at it.
"Forward, in the name of the Emperor and Saint Celestine!" she cried.
And as one they advanced. Unctorian Goffrey hastened down a red-lit tunnel with his las pistol glowing hot in his hand. Around him advanced the sons and daughters of murdered Cadia. The tunnels had narrowed as they pushed into the mines, funneling the soldiery until only a handful of warriors could fight abreast. They moved up with well-drilled efficiency, dashing between the cover of side passages and burned-out generators, overturned servitor carts and makeshift sandbag barricades. Their lasguns and support weaponry howled as they sprayed fire at the cultists moving through the crimson glow. Dead from both sides layered the stone floor, Cadians in blackened flak armour and fatigues, cultists in cannibalised mining garb, crude face masks and foul robes of flayed skin. Goffrey bellowed his hate as he marched through the press. He shoved Cadians aside where they impeded his progress and fired his las pistol, as though hurling the bolts of energy by hand. Each shot found another cultist, punching through faces and chests and leaving them sprawled in the dirt. Return fire whined around him, bullets finding homes in Cadian bodies or blasting stone shrapnel from the walls. Goffrey was plying his mindcraft to its fullest, a raging headache building behind his eyes as he nudged the enemy into changing their aim or panicking just as they pulled the trigger. He didn't care. The spectacle of a priest walking miraculously untouched through a hail of fire was worth the pain, for it would inspire and terrify in equal measure, and thus ease his passage. He would burn out of his own mind if he had to, just so long as he did his duty first.
And lo, though the hordes of the unclean and the unworthy did stand before them, and though the hordes were many and the faithful men were few, still did the Emperor's servants prevail, for their hearts were pure.
He bellowed, his deep voice booming over the howl of gunfire and the sawing warp note on the air. The Cadians who heard it rallied and fought all the harder, while their heretical enemies quailed in fear. Another heretic burst from behind a barricade and charged at Goffrey, screaming and brandishing a revving rock cutter. Goffrey adjusted his aim without breaking stride and shot the man through the knee. The cultist fell with a cry, and his rock cutter landed on top of him in a snarling spray of blood and bone chips. Goffrey barked a cruel laugh and marched on.
"Ha ha ha! To me!" he shouted, and sent a nudge to those Cadians whose wills he had suborned.
A handful of soldiers broke from their positions and hastened to his side, ignoring the shouts of surprise and anger that came from their sergeants. One such officer tried to stop two of her soldiers from breaking ranks, grabbing one of them by the arm. Goffrey shot the sergeant in the face, throwing her body back against the stone wall.
"Do not impede the Emperor's work, witch!" he hissed.
Goffrey ducked down a side passage before the startled Cadians could react, and his thralls, a dozen in all, followed. Their expressions were blank and slack, but their